Okay. Well, my name's Paul Lamb from HP. It's not bad. It's not really rapturous, but it's okay. So, guys, we've got a couple of things to get through this morning. There's actually a presentation in three sections. One is a strategic presentation. We look at what are we doing, particularly around the industry and our impact on the industry, what we're doing as we go forward, and some of the drivers and some of the capabilities that are available to us, and what are we doing about them as an industry, concerns for business, concerns for IT. Part two of that comes down to a testimonial or a special guest we're going to invite into the room. And then the last part, we're going to do a little practical demonstration to give you an idea of what the hands-on for some of the things that we've talked about is. So we'll try and get a view of, you know, from the CIO perhaps, and then around what are some of the architectural and product things we think about, and then how would it actually look if you're operating it at your place. So that's the plan. So what I wanted to do firstly was just get a really basic construct up in front of you. Point number one, or question number one, who in the audience has seen this concept before? This view about operations versus innovation expenditure. Quick show of hands. Nice and big. I can see we've got a couple of bung shoulders in the room. We've got nods, but not a lot of hands. So what's it telling us? I mean, think about this in actual context. I have the pleasure of meeting a number of different layers in organisations and spend a bit of time up with the CIO layer in a bunch of different sized organisations, large and small. And every time you ask this question, not, you know, tell me what's your ratio of innovation to spending, you know, no, not that, but look, you know, can you give us an idea of what sort of spend you have in an operational context, in a maintenance context, in terms of your IT budget? And overwhelmingly, the answer is up in the mid-80s, not down in the 60s or 50s. So what's that telling us? You know, when we think about the function of information technology as a inside our businesses or as a department, what's the job of the IT organisation? It's to make sure our shareholders get more return, or our government gets re-elected, or our citizens stay healthy, or our kids get educated, or we understand the structure of the human genome to drive a better agricultural experience. Whatever that outcome is for your organisation, that's the function of IT. Not to just be good at IT. I know, contrary to popular belief, and you know, if you get involved in some conversations, you'd think that was the way, that's what it was for, but it's not. It's to help drive those business outcomes. So when we look at this conversation here and see that, you know, this is HP's personal experience. This is HP's experience as a company. We went through an IT transformation a couple of years ago. And we actually went through a transformation process where we determined or decided that everything that we do and use at HP will be our own stuff. And if we don't have it, we'll develop it or we'll buy it. You know, very much eating our own dog food kind of conversation. That's what we say over at home anyway. So that conversation there, 70% was our experience and only 30% driving towards innovation. And the goal for us, the goal for everything that we do around HP is trying to flip that ratio, trying to move that ratio of spend so that you and your organisations can drive outcomes that make a difference for your business. How many of you have a list of projects that you just haven't got round to yet on your desk or on the wall? You know, come, let's be honest about this one now. Like everybody has. Why not? Why haven't you got to them yet? I would contend down at the infrastructure layer inside your data center, most of the time, you're not getting to use those great feature sets that you bought when you went out and thought, you know what, I'm going to be really diligent and going to go to buy the best of breed of this technology. I'm going to buy the best of breed storage. I'm going to run an extensive RFP program. I'm going to spend a lot of money evaluating all the best facilities, and then I'm going to get the best bang for my buck. I'm going to get a feature set that's risk. I might pay a little bit rich. I might pay a bit more for it, but I'm going to get the best I possibly can. Yeah? And the same thing in my network, and the same thing in my compute engines, and the same thing in my management layer. And then we spend all of our time trying to make it work together. We never actually get through that point to use that rich feature set that we bought. The thing we paid the extra dollars for, that we went to all that trouble to find, we don't get to use it. Because as you're moving towards going to that proposition, new patch, new version of something, new app system, whatever it is, you then got to go through and run around the roundabout of testing and integration again. That's nuts. Right? That's crazy. And the whole drive of converged infrastructure, a term that HP coined about 4 years ago, which now I see on marketing brochures and advertisements in all over the industry, but the term converged infrastructure is about driving that outcome. Let us do that integration work. You guys work on getting your solutions implemented quickly. Right? Your time to solution is the most critical aspect. And in fact, the conversation with most senior people that I have, Pricing's pricing. It's kind of done and dusted. You know, we all sort of know roughly what you've got to pay for everything, and it all makes sense. It's down to how quickly can I get my environment operating? How quickly can I respond to a competitive threat? How quickly can I respond to a legislative change? How quickly can I respond to a new opportunity in my market? Regardless of whether you're in commercial or in the public sector. So that's the view of this conversation, and that's what we're driving towards. So as we go through and we talk about some of the capabilities in our strategy and the productization of that strategy, that's what we're trying to get to. Trying to make sure you can shift 70% over to get more over here. And I don't just mean money. I don't just mean the cash and the budgets around the IT organization. Because if I went back to the show of hands, how many of you have got projects that are outstanding? How many of those projects relate to or are delayed because you don't have enough money? None. Because you don't have money and you can go and get a contract or you can go and get an external organisation to help you do it, but it's that IP at your place that's constrained. It's the process and the people are constrained at your place. And that's stopping you getting across the line. And at all levels through IT organisations, us as an industry have a lot to answer for. And that's why we sort of drive this change. So let me make this leap. Tell you what, any of you got kids? Got a five-year-old? Or know a five-year-old? Being a five-year-old, maybe. When my kids were little, well, I got a 22-year-old. He's about 11 foot tall. He got exactly my mass. He's just like taller and slender. I'm not sure how that worked. I got a little girl who's delightful. When the big fellow, when he was five, it was Action Man was all the go. And the little one, it was Polly Pockets. But you know, if you're going through the checkout at the supermarket or at Target or something like that, and you got the vanity items all up the front there, and the kids are like, I want one of those. I want one of those. You know, in many organisations, the executive, the board, the CIO are kind of like that. You know, my little girl asking for the Polly Pockets. You know, I just want a cloud. I want to get to this really quickly because there's a promise. There's a promise about reducing our costs, being more agile with the way we can drive business, not getting locked up into a view or a contract that takes me to a place that I perhaps don't want to be getting locked in. And therefore, when you guys, and I'm sure you all are, in fact, let me once again, quick show of hands. How many of you in the audience are evaluating cloud technologies right now? Yeah, a whole bunch. And the question comes down to how do we do this? Do we do this with our traditional infrastructure? Do I continue to drive IT the way I've done it before? Or do I just forget the mess and go straight out and consume cloud services from a public cloud provider? And there's certainly an option. But what we do know is that if you look into the statistics, we see that, IDC, Gartner, blah, 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 if you can sort of pick them out. But IDC's latest report, I think, and we might need to verify that fact before I go on. The latest report I read on consumption said that about 20% of workloads by 2015 will be based on public cloud consumption. And about 80% of workloads will still exist in traditional IT infrastructures or behind the firewall inside the customer's IT organisation. And then this bit over here, bridging the gap between what we've done forever and the consumption of services into private clouds and managed clouds is in fact where our customers, we experience, are driving today. Because they want the economics, they want to get that cloud-like solution or scenario, and they want to make sure they've got the agility. But there's some significant concerns. And that's where we get to up here. So if you have a look on this top line here, business is adopting cloud 2.5 times faster than IT. What do you think that means? Anyone at your place today consuming cloud services with a credit card? Yeah? No? Just in the room, who's using SkyDrives at the moment? Or an equivalent conversation, Dropbox or Box or something similar? Now let's do this really properly. Who's using them? Right? Of you lot, how many of you understand the security policies of that organisation? Yeah? How many of you understand your organisational policy for the use of that capability? Okay, the numbers are getting lower. How many know that your organisational policy and the security policy of that organisation actually match? Okay, so now we're getting to the truth, right? So you dodgy buggers are out there using this stuff, and it's kind of against contravening the view of your organisation. That's okay, I suppose, but who gets a foot in the bum when that test data that you decided to use out there in a public environment suddenly finishes up somewhere you didn't want it to finish up? not be customer-related information. It might not be Paul Lamb, Australia, blah, blah, blah. It might actually just be that you've exposed the data structures of your internal customer database. And then someone down the path with a SQL injection might do something dodgy. Yeah? That's happening all the time. And who is it that's ultimately responsible? It's this guy here. And by extension, the IT organisation. So even though user departments are out there running around, we do, as I mentioned earlier, payroll processing we do somewhere else. We use Salesforce.com regularly right across the industry. There's lots of cloud providers or external service providers, and businesses are consuming their services. But more and more on top of that, we've got businesses, the business side of our organisations are out buying cloud services independent of the IT organisation. And then the CIO does what? What's the concerns that we have? And we see those listed in here really clearly. Number one concern, vendor lock-in. Right? Nobody wants to be locked into a program. Nobody wants to be locked in for too long. Nobody wants to have the, we've got some interesting ways of licensing technology around our business. And from time to time you feel like, I wish I hadn't made that investment perhaps in that database vendor along the way. Because all of a sudden I'm now locked into this technology and I'm getting charged like a bull for the right to use it. I didn't expect that at the start. Similarly around, some of the facilities we see around infrastructure and virtualization. Nobody wants to be locked in. So we have that key concern there. But more importantly, as we drop down into performance and availability, how many of you experienced or have seen in recent times some very clearly famous organizations who've had problems like their data center ran out of diesel? Yeah, and all of a sudden, availability drops to zero. Right? Which applications, which people, which customers, we don't know, but an impact. When we sit outside looking back into that, considering how am I going to go and move to a consumption-based model in cloud, I need to be sure that the company that I'm going to has those capabilities and have those operational procedures. I can absorb the risk internally, right? And I've got all the processes and procedures internally to manage that risk. But if I move to an external provider, am I absolutely sure that they are managing that risk? And then we move to security as a classic. Now, we've all got little stories, right? There's an organization in the US, I delivered some flowers to somebody, and then a few months later I got a note saying, I'm sorry, but your credit card details have gone missing from our site. And I'm sure you've all got famous examples in your own life where you've got a notification to say, this social networking page, for example, you need to change your password. And of course, we all use different passwords for different sites, right? So the fact that your site, your password was taken over there doesn't necessarily mean that it impacted anything else in your life. If you go and have a look at Gizmodo and look at the editor of Gizmodo's situation at the moment with his data, his digital life being erased, just so that some people could get a handle on his, get access to his Twitter handle. Those types of issues that we see, without being very specific in this discussion, but those issues that we see, every IT organisation has to be concerned about that. Because getting to that outcome, getting to those cloud-like economics, that cloud-like agility, comes at an additional cost to our organisation that we have to get our hands around. And then finally, this question of integration of cloud services and on-premise services. If you're using an external CRM system but an internal ordering system, how do you make those two things tie up? Just a simple conversation like that. Let alone quality of service, transactional integrity, blah, 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 and linking all those pieces together. And remembering we live in a heterogeneous world. So how do you make sure that you can provide those capabilities internally, where you might be a complete Windows shop, externally, where they might be using other technologies? And you need to make sure that everything's working together very nicely. Make sense so far? Happy enough so far? So we need a bit of rapturous applause from it. Come on. Yes! I feel like I'm milking the system, but just don't tell anybody. I wanted to just finally move to this conversation, and it's about our ability as an industry, your ability as an organisation, to move through the steps that we need to take. And at the infrastructure, architecture, management layer of our organisations, there's a view and there's a drive to try and move from, this term, moving from servers to services, to change our view of our IT, to switch that from I'm bringing together a bunch of capabilities and linking them up and then having that served up to a business or a department, and rather flipping that over to the department being a consumer of the services that we create. And it is a strategic mindset change for your company. And in making that mindset change, it requires an operational change and a change in the way we present ourselves. And yet, right now, we're kind of rooted down here in this part of the infrastructure and in our industry. Right now, we're still, most organisations have kind of got the standardised and consolidation bit right. And most organisations have. There's still a few. Brave organisation put their hand up on that conversation, but most people seem to have that pretty well done. Everybody's virtualised. In Australia and New Zealand, in particular in New Zealand, largest footprint of virtualisation in the world. But we didn't do anything different. Right? When we moved to this view of virtualising everything that we did, we just virtualised everything that we did. So while we got fantastic benefits, perhaps, from a consolidation point of view, we didn't change the operational practices. We didn't change the way we do our jobs on a day-to-day basis. So all of the sins we were committing physically, we now started to commit virtually. And that's not okay. And just think about that for a minute. I was having a drink with someone yesterday afternoon, and they gave me this awesome experience where they bought a book, an e-book, online through Amazon with their credit card. Right? So they bought something that they never actually received from something that doesn't exist with money that they didn't have. Hello, Gay Duncan. I thought that was a good joke. I like that. Virtualization, the most important part of that is the automation piece. Right? It's all good and well to virtualize. It's fantastic. We can standardize our equipment and our operating environments. We can consolidate them and get better utilization and drive the cost line. But without this automation piece, we actually don't change materially what we do on a day-to-day basis. And without that bit absolutely nailed down, it's near impossible to move past this line here. And then helping our organisations become service-led, the IT organisation becoming a service broker, that we have a capability over here at the first step to drive self-service infrastructure. Self-service, perhaps from the IT department. I'm not advocating the view that, you know, little Jimmy in accounts goes and runs himself up a new SAP environment. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is that if they need a new SAP environment in the accounts department, or if the test and dev process in our new implementation of our ERP environment needs to be built, that it can be done automatically and that IT or that unit can order, provision, have it delivered, pay for it as they go, and give it back into the pool when they're done. And that doesn't have to be, as we've discussed already, that doesn't have to be to an external provider. That can be delivered very nicely by the IT organisation today. And in doing that, avert these concerns whilst getting these outcomes. So, when you're talking to us at HP, and we talk about driving towards our converged cloud and our cloud outcomes, very strongly we're looking to get you over that step. Make sense? Okay, I'm going to just pull up stumps for a minute and change tack a little. I'm going to change tack and I'm going to change clickers. So let me do that. In fact, we've been fortunate enough to have a special guest join us from Singapore. Senior guy, our people have been looking after him pretty well over the last couple of days, and I'm going to invite him to come up to the stage with me now to just talk through their experience around this delivery of the cloud environment. So what I might do is just get ourselves lined up, and I'll invite John to come to the stage. Give him a round of applause, please. He's a skinny little fella, isn't he? Good looking bloke, though. Nice tie, nice pants. I'm not sure if his name should be John, though. Got any ideas? Anybody? Cecil? Clark. Yeah, I don't mind that, actually. Clark's pretty good. I thought of Gene, actually, because when he walks out, you could say, hi, Gene. But that's a really daggy joke. And I'm not sure what's going on here, but this is the first time I've felt tall next to anybody in my life. So I'm doing very well. Anyway, this is Clark. Clark's is the CIO for a reasonable-sized bank in Southeast Asia. And he's got a job to do, and that is they're looking to expand into China. Growth market, rah, rah, rah. Now, banking, the banking environment generally has a couple of different avenues. There's the retail banking side of the banking industry, so branches open, online systems available, mobile phone delivery, smartphones, etc., to deliver the banking applications for the users. There's also the institutional banking side, which is about, you know, driving economies, the engine room behind the economies, providing finance to organisations to help build their businesses. And of course, there's the treasury function. And all of those things are sort of balanced in the banking environment and have to be balanced, you know, by John as the CIO. So what is he wrestling with? He's wrestling with 24/7 operations. 24/7 isn't just about the user experience. It's also about all of the back-end features that need to happen. And it's really easy, particularly in banking, but for all of the industries that we work in, to over-provision, to put far more in that we need, which drives up our cost, power and cooling, our operational expenses, the number of people required to deliver the outcomes. And all of that driving, just making sure that 24/7 works effectively. The other point we've got to look at for old John is this time to market question. And again, at your place, that list of tasks that you have waiting for you to get onto and finish up, today, John's in exactly the same boat. But most of those tasks, if he doesn't get them knocked over, impact his organisation and their ability to expand their business. They can't run up new branches, they can't run up new services if their IT functions are too slow to respond. Of course, everyone's driven towards the elements of finance cost and the efficiency of our operational model. So while we look at the purchase price in just about everything we do, very rarely do we go through and look at the ongoing and model the ongoing costs and the efficiencies we can gain from our organisation. So when we talk about a 70-30 split between operations and innovation, most organisations, in fact, don't know what that number is. They just know that it's high. And getting control of that, getting control of those operational costs and driving efficiencies in the organisation is the key to freeing up resources and freeing up people to go and help you knock over those projects. And then the last one is scale. And when we think about scalability, we often think of it in terms of being able to expand rapidly. Is that a fair call? Being able to meet business need, meet changes in transaction load, so on and so forth. What we don't often consider, though, is the recovery of those resources back into the pool. How many of you are in the experience where you've been using storage rapidly in one application environment, but you've got nothing over here to support another one? And when this one dies off, there isn't a real easy ability to move that into somewhere else, or compute or networking, regardless of the infrastructure piece. So what's John up to? In the perfect world, he should be out being, you know, playing golf with vendors and having expensive dinners, but he's not. He's weighed down with the day-to-day operations. The traditional operational constructs that we use, one application per server, be that physical or virtual. We load up as much work as we can into the environment. We're constantly fighting fires, trying to get that clear ability to service our business. But every time we think we're getting onto the home straight, we start getting loaded up with additional stories, additional capability. And every month, there's another operating environment, another system, another idea flowing through. And it's just too hard to cope. Now, why is he so skinny and fit looking? It's because he's working out every day, just carrying that load around. As we've already made the proposition that there is a reasonable case to be made today for moving that workload, for moving that environment into a cloud discussion, and looking to gain the agility to look at that availability that he needs, get those costs under control and drive that scale. And effectively, when we look at the HP point of view, we look at that in terms of a number of key propositions or key capabilities. The first one being converged infrastructure. As I said earlier, the burden, the time taken to deliver the infrastructure that you use today, your best of breed strategy, that strategy that sees you perhaps, you know, trying to deliver that innovation or the integration of your environment of compute, of storage and networks, rather than having it turn up ready to go, open the door, load it up, and it's operational when it turns up on site. Not 30 days of integration testing, not 60 days of integration time, not trying to work out how to pull all the operating environment and the apps together, but it turns up ready to go. And it's cabled one time. cable one time for networking. In fact, you can remove the view around SAN cabling with a flat SAN capability right at the back of it. You pull significant cost and significant time out of the implementation of the infrastructure using that converged story. How do you do it? Really simple. Simple parts and capability, which Martin's going to talk about in a little while. The second part of the conversation, if the infrastructure's under control, is what do we do about the way we provision, the way we drive that infrastructure. And at HP, our capability we call Cloud Maps. And that's about taking the elements that make up the application environment, make up the physical infrastructure, demonstrating how they should be plugged together, and then labeling them with the operating environment into our catalog. And if I've just been able to create myself a Dynamics environment, I can pack that away into an environment that can be stamped again and again and again. No user, oops, I've made a mistake, I've deployed the wrong thing, I've just wiped out someone else's, the production database and deployed this. No, a consistent image, a consistent view every single time. Now that's great if you're on the operations side of the business, but for those developers in the room, particularly those of you who run your own business, how great would it be if you could sell to your customer the concept that not only do you have this provisioning puzzle and the riddle is solved, there's a cloud map that you deliver with your application environment, but you know every single time that your customer can be operational straight away, rather than have to go through months of physical integration. And all of that then wraps up inside the service catalog. And the service catalog is designed to store these capabilities away and then can be exposed in a number of different ways. At the most rudimentary level, it can be just exposed to the IT organization. And so when a user organization comes along and says, I want to buy something, I want to create an environment, it's there available for you to go. And let's consider that in terms of, let's say, the Dynamics plan that we just built, the map that we just built. So for I can see straight away, these are the resources that I need. If it wasn't big enough, we can go back in and change it. We can actually ask to go through the process. But at the end of the day, we understand exactly what it's going to cost us. And we know that we can apply this capability for a defined period of time. So if it's a short-term marketing project and we're going to use this capability to do some data analysis and the project finishes in a month's time, we can give it back. And equally, it's not just one size fits all. So let's say we're deploying an ERP environment, a significantly bigger infrastructure, perhaps more intensive in terms of utilization. Again, let's look at the charging mechanism. Let's look at how much it's going to cost. And the user can make a determination. Should I buy this from here or somewhere else? Now, as I say that, that charge capability, you can either just show it straight back to the user. And that always lights everybody's eyes up, right? You just look at how much you're spending here. Very equally, it can be integrated back into your ongoing chargeback model. Because every business has a charging model for something. I mean, you charge for your staff, businesses charge for staff, charge for the floor space that they use, they charge for the pencils and staplers that they use. They're also can be charged for the IT and integrated straight back into that billing system. And all of that you can facilitate from the IT organization. The next step is the orchestration piece. So I've been able to deliver an infrastructure on the floor operating as it's delivered. I'm able to create a view of my application environment, map it up, package it up into an easy to use, easy to deploy package, store it in a catalog. Then when it's time to deploy, what do I do? Well, for a start, the capacity of your environment can be analysed in real time. The environment will give you its best recommendation on where to drop this application package. What's the best performance characteristic? What's the best capacity characteristics? It will manage the workflow. So you don't finish up with that nasty $18,000 credit card bill because someone left something running up in a public cloud provider over the weekend. You can determine through the workflows which manager gets to sign off in which part of the story. And once the workflow is complete, the orchestrator, little fellow here, I thought he was Captain Kirk actually, What's his name again? I've forgotten his name now. Anyway, I thought he looked a little bit like Captain Cook, but I can't think of a better example. But everyone needs a Gandalf, even if he is hobbit-sized. So that that capability that you have can be delivered, managed, the workflow managed, and can be driven directly to a business outcome within the time frame that you need it to occur. I've got some great examples. You know, 3 months to deliver the SLA to deliver a virtual machine from one service provider to another. Some of our customers tell us it takes 6 months from the time they decide to implement to the time they can actually deploy a piece of equipment and an application system in production. 6 months. And most of us pat ourselves on the back because we can get it down to a few weeks, right? Yeah? We can do this in minutes. We're talking about getting this knocked over in, you know, maybe a couple of hours, including the workflows. That's the type of capability that you can expose for yourself straight away. And the bit I love, of course, is that when you're done, just pack it up and give it back. So if the resources are underutilized or they're sitting there idle, then the business unit doesn't have to pay for them and you can take some action inside of IT. Some of our customers turn the equipment off when it's not being used now. We're over that bit about, oh, don't turn it off, it'll never start again. We kind of threw that. And out of the proposition of if you've got resource that you sit there, because everybody over provisions, right? Your average utilisation, somewhere between 15 and 18%, but you do need it for that one day, you know, that Good Friday where the ATM rates go through the roof, or Christmas where your pre-Christmas retail transactions go through the roof, and the rest of the year you don't have to. In Australia, Melbourne Cup Day, the betting agency, the TAB, right, that's the day, 2 o'clock on, you can't have the TAB system go down at 2 o'clock on Cup Day. The rest of the year, it's sitting there yawning. Right, this is exactly the type of conversation that we're talking about. And then the last bit is the provisioning and monitoring piece. So the orchestrator is driving the view out of the catalogue using the cloud maps that you've defined on infrastructure that you provisioned like that, and then the provisioning guy's out there making sure that it happens. And the monitoring process is making sure that it gets delivered. So in this little example here for John, he's got his network, he's got a new application system coming on board, he's got the right operating environment, he's got the right hardware, he's got the right monitoring in place to make sure that it occurs. The workflow's occurred, the business has ticked off on the program and they know how they're going to use it. And when they're done, if it's a short-term project, they put it back in the pool. All the while constantly monitoring the capacity, advising you on what's the best provisioning, what's the best size for your organisation. And it's not just about doing it in one spot, but you can do it across sites. You can pick up workloads and move them from one spot to another as you need to. It can be integrated and orchestrated, and you can drive up greater levels of capability from that position and layer that up into a full-scale service provision model if you choose. Now, all of that integrates beautifully up into System Center. So at no point are we advocating that this is a one or the other conversation. This is about getting the underlying infrastructure provisioning nailed down, and then where you choose, hand up to the next layer. But all of that layered out to a nice, easy prospect. And as we pull it together, you drop it into the environment, you can start with a very narrow case. And in fact, if I think about strategically what our customers are doing in the majority of cases today, their thinking is, let's build out my internal private cloud and let's pop that over in the corner. And then from that position, let's start to build that up. So as I retire applications, as I go through new versioning, if I move into new application environments, I move those into this side, and all the while, I start retiring the stuff that I don't do anymore. After a period of time, what we're really seeing is that organizations are then taking this environment and reaching out to encapsulate all of their legacy. And the strategy from us at that point is to take that legacy and make sure that it's all wrapped up into the same piece. So, when we get down to it, a fairly complex problem that can be solved with a number of relatively simple steps to deliver a very concrete outcome for you. Reducing the time to market, reducing the cost of that infrastructure, and making sure that you can get your hands around a far more agile IT environment. How's that sound? All right, I've had enough with John. Let's give him a round of applause. Get out of here, John. You're gone, my friend. Oh, look, what I'd like to do now is ask Martin Livingston to join me on the stage. Martin, many of you will know, leads our strategic consulting view from a pre-sales perspective here in New Zealand, helping companies move from where they are today to where they want to go to. And Martin's going to take us through some of the operational aspects of these capabilities. So let's have 10 or 15 with you, eh?
Yep, thanks, Tom.
All the best.
That is tech head after all, yeah. Okay, so I'm Marty Livingstone. I'm one of the pre-sales consultants based in Auckland for HP. So Paul mentioned cloud system. So cloud system is a pre-packaged, out-of-the-box, off-the-shelf, whatever you want to call it, solution that enables you to deliver cloud services in minutes and hours rather than weeks and months. So the way it works is there's a service catalogue where users go to a self-service portal, they choose what they want, and then the infrastructure gets provisioned. And the infrastructure can be physical and virtual servers, the VLANs, the LUNs on the SAN that are connected with that, and any associated applications and operating systems. And once it's deployed, then we constantly manage and monitor it. So it's real-time capacity planning all the time that allows you to breathe in and breathe out, or scale up, scale down, however you want to call it. And then because we're using resources, then we can release them back into a pool. So once you've finished using the application or you've finished using the infrastructure, it gets put back. So this is application lifecycle management or infrastructure lifecycle management. Excuse me. So one of the components is there's no vendor lock-in. So this can be just the software alone or the cloud system integrates. If you've got existing EMC storage or you've got IBM storage or you've got Juniper or Cisco networking, you don't need a whole HP package. So it's very open. It allows you to swap components in and out as you need to. So the idea is to bring together all these pools of resources, make them interoperable and share them. So Cloud Maps is the foundation for the cloud system. So this allows you to design and provision infrastructure in minutes. So it's physical as well as virtual. So let's say the user goes to a self-service portal and the user doesn't need to know or care where those services are coming from. They could be in-house in a private cloud, or they could come from Amazon or HP Cloud Service or Savvis. So the idea is to reduce this sprawl and drive your utilization up of your infrastructure, because VM sprawl is even harder to fix than physical sprawl. So real-time capacity planning allows you to monitor and measure constantly whatever you're doing. And that gives us the ability to, if a user response on a database server drops below a certain level, you've got the capacity to inject another node into the cluster to get that user response back up, and then take the node away again when the response drops back down, or to inject another web server if your company has a marketing campaign or whatever. So some of the use cases for this would be like a dynamic test and development environment, if there's any developers in the room. So this is where you can change a server from being one thing connected to different networks and storage one day and then change it to be something totally different the next day. Or if you go on holiday, you can offline it, just like you can, you know, template a VM and stop it, and then pick it back up again when you come off. But in the meantime, someone else has used the infrastructure for something else. So it gives you this ability to keep moving forwards and chopping and changing the infrastructure and getting the most out of it. If you're using it in a real world, if you want to fail over, we can fail over services from one site to another. So virtualization tools are great, but you just fail over the virtual components. So because Cloud Maps and Cloud System is physical and virtual, we can fail over services together. So your virtual and your physical move over one site to another, fail back again. Or we can fail a physical server to a remote virtual server and then fail back to a physical server. So this is an example of a two-tier shopping application and time to deploy. This is the cloud map, and I'll show you how we create the cloud map shortly. Well, this is the time to deploy. So you can see the user goes to the self-service portal, requests the service, it gets approved, so it can just be approved by the system administrator, or it can go through your change control process and your rollback procedures and get changed that way and approved that way. And then the infrastructure gets provisioned, and then your operating system and your applications. And then also, and if anything's happened in the meantime, anything out of date, it's all policy-based, so you can apply latest security patches or updates or whatever, rather than just deploying a plain template. So if you deploy virtual, anybody can deploy virtual machines, but now that's like, so 2007, 2008, now you need to deploy your applications as well. It's this whole infrastructure where if you've ever created or deployed a service, you'll know you need to get in the expert resources, and it's a very serial process, as you can see. So you go through lots of planning meetings and people design it and you get people in, and then the infrastructure gets built and cabled up manually, and then you've got to actually publish and deploy it and create workflows, and then it's deployed, or you make a mistake and you go back again. So it's very error prone and it takes a long time. It's a serial process. This is an IDC number 10 weeks here, but I know customers who wait, it takes them 3 months just to get an IP address before you even go through all this rigmarole. So what Cloud Maps does is it condenses all this long, complex, error-prone processes into a Cloud Map. So this is where you get all your governance and compliance and your change management all done up front. So all that's done out the way, so everything's pre-approved before you even bought a server or you've installed a blade into the rack or whatever. So the idea is to deploy into minutes and hours. So virtualization tools are good anyway, but they're just a point-in-time copy. It's just a snapshot of when you actually created that template. And it addresses only just the publishing and the deployment. You might say it's just for virtual machines. But what happens if you want to change or modify something? If you want, say, another template with different memory or different CPUs, then you create another golden image. And you end up with a raft of golden images for different things. What Cloud Maps does is it also addresses the physical and the virtual. So I can deploy to a physical server just the exact same I would deploy to a virtual server. And at deployment time, it allows you to be flexible, so you can add extra CPUs or add extra memory or whatever to your Cloud Map, your design. So what constitutes a Cloud Map? So a Cloud Map is, it's instructions, it's XML instructions, which tells you how the hardware and software gets deployed. And you can import it directly into your cloud system or the Matrix operating environment. Or it can be provided to you by somebody else, or you can design your own if you're a developer. So let's say in test and dev, you can create something in test and development and move it through from development through to production. So now we include sizes as well. So if you go, like in the old days, you went to like the HP website and you, let's say you sized an Exchange server, you'd put in how many users you wanted and you know what size the mailboxes were, so on and so forth. And it'd spit out a bill of materials that you'd give to the salesman or whatever and say, this is what I need. Well, now it spits out a Cloud Map. So we've done all that design and design and hard work and capacity planning all up front and integration. And there's also workflows as well. So the workflows integrate how you integrate it into any backup routines, how you integrate it into change management. And that's the automation and orchestration that saves a lot of the time. Because this is, if you're just deploying a template or you're just doing something, then it's just like a serial process and it's a one time only. And you come to do it again, then you have to pretty much start over again. Whereas with workflows and Cloud Maps, you just do slight amendments. So this is a snapshot of the current Cloud Map portfolio. There's a lot of other partners that have got their own individual internal Cloud Maps. So you can see here now, so if I want to deploy something like Microsoft Dynamics, and I wanted to integrate it into the load balancers and at the same time integrate it into the backup routine, it's all automated and done for you. You just modify the Cloud Maps. So from importing a Cloud Map down to actually physically deploying the infrastructure and the applications that go with it, it can be as little as an hour. So what I'll do is I'll take some time just to show you how we build a Cloud Map. Very simple demonstration. And so hopefully the penny will drop and you'll see how easy it is to do. Just get past these, just our own internal demo screen shots. So within Cloud System, you have a service designer. So this is where a solution architect would go and design the service. That service then gets published to a service catalog where users or organizations can go and access through the self-service portals. So it's like a Visio diagram, like a meta template. So it's active and you can pass it around and change it. So what we do is we drag and drop these components onto the canvas. So you can see there's the orange physical servers and physical storage, and then there's virtual servers and virtual storage and networking. So if I'm just going to create a very simple template, if I want to connect this server to a network and this server to some storage, that's how easy it is to do. So this uses HP Virtual Connect modules in the Blade system and the Cloud System enclosures for physical servers. For virtual existing hypervisors, then we can just buy the software and this does it for you as well. So now what I do is I go and describe how I want the network to look. And you can see here, there's the mixture of physical and virtual networks. And so the virtual networks come from the hypervisor management, and the physical networks come from the virtual connect modules in the back of the blade enclosures. So if I want to connect this virtual machine to the blade system network, and I have a look what connections there are, so we can do secure multi-tenancy. So everything's isolated and separated from other users. So we can see we can create server groups where only particular groups of servers or applications can only access certain networks. So you get this secure isolation of different blades, physical and virtual blades within the same infrastructure. So if I go and look at the servers, again, you can see this is where we give the server a name. And if I want it to be a virtual or a physical server, what cluster type? Give it a cost, so you might have noticed on the networking we could put a cost to the port of the IP, and here's the cost per server. And then how many servers we want in the infrastructure. So I'm just deploying a simple virtual machine here, but this could be, you know, like a SQL cluster, so you could have minimum 2 servers, maximum 4, so that gives you the ability to expand and contract. And then we just describe how many processors we want on the server and how much memory. If we want it's a virtual machine, do we want it put into a HA cluster or not? So if I give the host name and finish it off with a pound sign for a continuation string, and then I have a look, well, how do I want this blade system network to be? Do I want my IP addresses assigned statically or DHCP or automatic? Excuse me. And then what software do we want to install onto the server? So we can either deploy templates, as you see here, or we can do manual software deployments, and if so, what's the operating system type? So you can see here, it gets the source is the hypervisor management. If you've got Insight Control or Alteryx Rapid Deployment, comes from there, or Server Automation, or Ignite if you're using HPUX. So if I deploy this template, this Windows Hyper-V template, onto my server, click OK, then if I go and have a look at what the storage do I want for this server. So give it a name, give the disk a size, a cost, and whether it's bootable or not. So what it's saying is I actually asked for 10 gigabyte disk, but the actual image is only 8 gigs, so it's going to just provision an 8 gigabyte disk. So this is just a virtual machine, but what we can do with physical servers as well is if I go down to this box down here, we can also describe if we want to be direct attached storage or physical or virtual. And we can also do tiering as well, so like gold, silver, bronze. So you don't have people just deploying test and dev servers to, you know, fast fiber channel disks that get replicated constantly between sites. So we just give them cheap SATA disks. And this is how we can do tiers and tagging on the storage as well. So this is where all the solution designer, the solution architects creates all this. So you can see now that the validation status has turned green, so everything can be seen, everything's allocated, and it's ready to go. Part of the intelligence in the cloud maps are the workflows that you can associate with the servers. Excuse me. So there's a library, there's plenty of workflows that we've already included in the system, and there's a designer as well, which I'll show you. So if I just drill down to a sample workflow to attach to this, so you can see that there are 9 points at the beginning and end of these services. So if I create a service or a deactivate a server, so workflows could be something as simple as just going to check a license server before you deploy something, or if you're shutting down an application server, it shuts it down nicely. Or it could be including it into the backup routine when you actually deploy something, so you don't have to then manually go and configure your Symantec or TSM or whatever. So if I add this sample flow to the end of creating the service, just okay this. I'll go and show you what the actual service designer looks like. So if I just navigate my way down to some integrations. Oh, yeah. So here's the sample flow that I attached to that service. So you can see this is really simple and it's easy to deploy. So basically all you do is it goes and gets the service name and the cost, who requested it, the IP address, the date and time it was requested, and then it runs a remote command, which basically is the workflow here. So this writes it, basically all it does is it just writes out to a web server, this web app 01, runs this script to say this user deployed this service on this date. Okay, very simple. There are more complex workflows. Okay, if I just shrink that now. I just go back to my designer portal. So clearly that's a very simple template and we can see the costs that are associated with that. So whether it's networking, server, storage. So once you're happy, then it gets published, and then the organisation administrators can then allocate this template, this cloud map, to self-service portals, different users for them to deploy. So if I look at what's actually working, so you can see there's different templates here. So clearly that's a very, very simple, just a virtual machine and some storage. But here's an example of an Exchange server deployment. So this is actually run from the Sizer for 1,000 users, and this gets imported into the cloud system operating software. So basically all we need to do now is, if I import this, all I need to do is go and modify the drop-down boxes, say I want to connect the service to my backup network and my management network, and just describe it. So that can take about an hour. But the idea is that people have done all this hard work for you, the months and months of design and deployment. We've done all the risk and the capacity planning for you and taken away the pain, so you don't need to deploy any experts to bring all this information to you. And if you're developing your own applications, like say, once you've done it, you do it once, it's automated, and that's it. So that was a quick demonstration of cloud maps and how we go about them. So where do we actually start? So whether you have existing blade system, or you have virtual system, which is something we'll be talking about this afternoon with Hyper-V or whatever, or you can build up to cloud system, it depends where you want to start. So if you've already done the consolidation and the standardization, or you want to move up to the virtualization and automation process, would you want to take it to that next step on the steps up, where you start to get to the self-service portals and a truly automated and orchestrated infrastructure? These are the steps to take. So whether you go directly to cloud system or whether you build your way up as you go, everything's modular. It's all built on the same underlying infrastructure. So your architecture stays the same. Whether you've just got a dynamic test and dev environment with a couple of servers, or whether you actually scale up through AIX, Solaris, through to national telco providers providing public cloud services, it's the same underlying infrastructure that allows you to scale. Thanks, Paul. So that's 10 o'clock by my watch.
Getting pretty close.
Yep.
Hey, thanks, Martin. Mate, don't disappear. We might have a question for you yet. Hey, look, just as we move to close, I wanted to maybe leave you with two thoughts. The first one is that whilst we would love it if the world was all Microsoft on HP, that's not the reality of our world. And it would be great if the IT infrastructure was completely managed in one spot so it was easy to do. What Martin's shown us today there through that cloud mapping and what we talked about today, you can take that approach and you can build out, regardless of the capability, regardless of the brand that you use, or perhaps some decisions you've made in the past that you'd like to move to something perhaps different, more cost effective, or a change in the future. You can use that environment to move and deploy resources between physical and virtual, and from virtual to other virtual within that environment. You can also use exactly the same environment to deploy your application environments, those cloud maps, out onto public cloud providers. So you can burst out to hpcloud.com or Amazon Web Services or Savvis. Right? Again, it's the same piece of infrastructure, the same technology that we've just shown you operating on a local environment is the same as you burst out to public cloud environments also. So as you take that journey from traditional infrastructure over to consumption of cloud services, you make the choice about which applications and which services go where through that platform. The second thing to consider is that what we've shown you today is the very basic capability. It can start out for as little as about $1 a virtual machine. So it's the very basic of our capabilities, and we build up on that to include a heterogeneous environment, which could include legacy Unix environments or other platforms, building out other application management capabilities, and in fact being able to leverage right up to the point to provide a complete aggregation layer of cloud services, where you might build cloud services from internal and external and then provide those to different user groups, even provide that aggregation level of service up to a full-blown cloud service provider. So those capabilities are all there, but they start with that very basic underlying infrastructure piece. So with that, I'm going to pull up stumps on the presentation, and perhaps we've got 1 minute if anybody had a question that they wanted to ask or to share a perspective quickly. That's cool.
So you're still deploying your Exchange environments. It's still Windows and Exchange and so on and so forth, and your management tools and so on, and whether you integrate it into System Center or whatever. So it's the exact same infrastructure, but the method of deployment and the method of monitoring, managing, and being able to flex the environment up and down, that's where a lot of the cleverness comes into the cloud maps and the workflows. So you're not deploying, it's not like you're deploying a different version of Windows or a different version of Exchange. Yeah?
I think perhaps you had to extend that. If you'd like to pop down to our exhibition and catch up with the guys, most of the conversations that flow from here, if all we've done is whet your appetite, we've done a good job. And really the view now is to take you in terms of a managed or stage plan. What do you look like today? Where would you like to be tomorrow? And incorporate exactly those types of questions. How does it fit in with my service management view of the world? How does it fit in with my existing tools, my ITIL processes, so on and so forth? And you can be very comfortable that it does, the how we can talk about, you know, one-on-one down at our stand. So with that, perhaps, let me thank you for your attention and your attendance to our session. Thank you for welcoming John to the stage. I know he was a real hit, and look forward to seeing you down at the stand in a little while. Thank you.